everybody. What is going on? I hope everyone is doing well, and welcome back once again to a brand new episode of Sweeten Up Podcast, season number 2, episode number 79. I hope everyone is doing well. I am your host, Jeff Spencer. Thank you so much for taking some time to join me today. I greatly appreciate it, whether you have for an entire season, an entire year, or you are today for the first time. Thank you so much for joining us. However, if you are just joining us for the first time, take a look back at our library of 78 episodes anytime you want, anywhere you subscribe to the show. As always, if you like what you hear on the podcast today and you want to hear more, please be sure to tell all your friends and subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcasts so that you never miss a future episode. You can find the podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Just search for Sweeten Up Podcast. We also have a merch store as well, and be sure to check that out, where you can find the link in our bio and our social media pages. With that being said, my guest on the podcast today is the great and powerful Charles Rosnay. Charles Rosnay is a Connecticut legend and may be best known in the state as the producer of the Connecticut Beatles conventions and festivals for over 4 decades, and as a pro DJ, MC, entertainer for as many years. Along with musical events, he published a magazine on the Beatles called Good Day Sunshine for 25 years, and since 1983, he has organized and hosted the Beatles tours to Liverpool for fans. Charles is a Beatles aficionado, expert, and promoter. Along with the Beatles-themed tours, Rosnay is the creator and organizer of the annual Dracula Tour to Transylvania, a vampire vacation that brings fans to the land of Vlad the Impaler and Dracula. Rosnay has acted in several horror films and shorts, and was also the founder of Connecticut's largest and scariest indoor haunted attraction, Fright Haven, which still operates in Stratford today. Just last year, Rosnay published his first book titled The Book of Top 10 Horror Lists, which collects lists of favorite monsters, movies, actors, and other themes from 100 celebrities. Charles is an extremely fascinating individual, and we covered it all, from the Beatles to the tours to Liverpool and Transylvania, ghost hunting, Paracon, his new book, acting in horror films, and so much more. So, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, my friend, the wonderful Crypt Master Chucky, Mr. Charles Rosnay. On the podcast today via Zoom video conferencing. I'm so excited to be chatting with this incredibly interesting individual on the other side of my computer screen. He is an entertainer, an MC, DJ, producer, Beatles aficionado, actor, impresario, tour organizer, promoter, haunted house operator, and most recently an author, a total Renaissance man, the great and powerful Charles Rosnay. And Charles, thank you so much for joining me on the show this evening. And how are you, my friend?
I'm great. I loved everything. I don't know if great and powerful really apply, but the others are actually, those are most of the hats I've worn.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, you're a total Renaissance man. Like I was saying before we got going here, I'm so glad that Frankie Vinci, a friend of the show and a friend of mine for a long time, got us together so we could chat. And you're super interesting, obviously, hence the everything that I explained in the intro. And so I'm so glad we could chat and dive into hopefully as much as it, of it as we can. We'll see. But thank you so much. Really appreciate it, your time, because I know there's so much going on. And, you know, one place I like to start with my guests, considering how crazy the last couple of years have been, some of the craziest times we've ever faced ever. And it's been wild. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of the things I listed, like I said, you know, an entertainer, you know, DJ, you know, that's a lot of things that were really impacted by COVID. So how did you get by COVID personally, professionally, everything like that?
Well, you know, Jeff, everything I did, I could not do. You know, I booked bands, couldn't do that. DJ couldn't do that. MC couldn't do that. Take people on tours to Liverpool or Transylvania, couldn't do that. Haunted, everything really, literally, I was shut down. And as horrible as that was, I had to find a way to turn lemon into lemonade, you know, to use that overused expression. But, you know, home with the folks, my wife, my kids were watching a lot of horror movies, catching up on stuff. They would go to bed around midnight, and that's when I'd start getting really creative. And I thought, you know, I had these lists. I had about 80, 70, I don't know, lists from celebrities who had given me their top 10 favorite horror themes, mostly horror movies, horror books, everything horror oriented, because that's my other passion besides music and Beatles and all that is the horror stuff, the scary stuff. And I said, wow, you know what? I never thought I would ever really write a book. And people always said, when are you going to write your Beatles book or when are you going to do your own memoirs? And this was something that you really, you know, I had 10 years of lists from celebrities. And I thought, maybe I can make a book out of this. I only need like 20 more to hit 100. And I thought, when I hit the 100, I'll make it happen. And it didn't take long. And all of a sudden, I got a book and I add author to the resume. And it's been a really fun journey because I never thought I'd write a book. And it's what it is so many cool people who I've been friends with through the years just said, sure, we'll do a list for you, you know, and who would have thought that, you know, all these people in celebritydom were also, you know, fans of monster movies like I was. But, you know, it wasn't that surprising because they're, you know, if someone is into the entertainment field, usually they're diverse enough to, you know, if I would have said, hey, give me a list of your top 10 favorite, you know, hip hop songs or top 10 favorite, you know, Beatles, they're going to come through, you know, or if they can't, they don't. And I probably reached out to hundreds, maybe 400 people. And of that, 100 gave us lists. And it's from every aspect. We got horror scream queens. We have TV sitcom stars, rock stars, athletes. You know, and it was just really special because some of the ones you didn't expect gave some amazing lists. And then when you go through it, it's, oh, yeah, I forgot about that person. Or I didn't realize that person was... So it's beyond just the list. It's a story about each of the person who contributed. It's a photo of them. And I wrote the, you know, the bios for them. And then we tried, let's say they did a horror list and The Exorcist was on the list. I would try to, you know, use a still from the film to accompany and, you know, embellish the book. And we got 300 pages later. And a year after submitting it to publishers, we finally got a publisher who put it out and loved it. And it's doing great, great Amazon reviews. And people who are getting it are just, Charles, this was, you know, the greatest book. And it's, you know, got me the itch because I have like a bunch more in the works now.
That's awesome. That's so good to hear because, yeah, it is such a great book. And, you know, for those listening right now, I know you have a website and everything. If you want to even plug that real quick, just so, you know, while we're on the same subject, go right ahead.
Yeah. No, please. It's www.bookoftop10, the number 10, not T-E-N, the bookoftop10horrorlists.com. The great thing about that is, yeah, you can read a little about the book. You can see the cover. But whereas at Amazon, if you buy the book, you just get the book. You get either soft cover or hard cover. If you do it through the website, you do it through me, I can sign it. You know, I can personalize it. And that's been awesome. You know, Jeff, being a fan of all this stuff all these years and attending, you know, horror conventions and celebrity events where I'm on the other side asking people for their autograph. I've been doing the shows now, doing horror conventions and going to libraries and being the author who's signing the books. I mean, that's a dream come true to be able to say, you know, dear Jeff, thank you for, you know, buying my book. You know, cheers, Charles. It's been really special.
That's so cool. That's really, really, really great. I love to hear it, man. And I can see your passion and energy about it. I love it. Who are some of those famous people in the book? Just for those listening, you know, maybe riddle off a few just so maybe they could be like, oh, okay. And because I know one of them is a professional baseball player, retired, but, you know, total, you know, Hall of Fame.
Hall of Famer Dave Winfield. So yeah. I put on the book. Inside, you'll find 100 lists from a Beatle, a McCartney, a Lennon sister, a Karloff, Boris Karloff's daughter, William Shatner, one of the Monkees, one of the Munsters from Scream Queens, from stars of movies, TV, radio, print, from 6 Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, from a Baseball Hall of Famer. But, it, you know, it runs the gamut from, you know, Pete Best, who was the Beatles' first drummer, to Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees, to William Shatner, to Ed Asner, who passed away before I was able to, you know, get him a copy of the book. Sadly, there's some of those who, you know, who gave me the list long ago and are no longer with us. And then there's others, you know, who were ready to give me a list and are no longer with us. So I got a lot of people, you know, from that era, from the 50s and 60s and 70s, you know, Ruth Buzzy from Rowan and Martin's Laugh, Eddie Deason, who was Eugene in Grease, is a lot of pop culture people who, if you're a nerd like I am, and you grew up loving, you know, movies and grew up loving, you know, everything related to show business, you know, this book is like it's like a who's who. And what's great is, you know, it's got another whole aspect to it, which someone brought up and said they enjoyed that probably as much as reading, you know, the 100 celebrities. Is, let's say their favorite film was The Shining. So in the back of the book, we list every single horror film, every book, everything list, you know, that was cited in the book. The appendix, the index is just ridiculously comprehensive. And so if you go to, let's say The Shining is your favorite movie, you look under there, it's like, whoa, Corbin Burnson, the actor, loved it. Pete Best, you know, the Beatles drummer, loved it. Ruth Buzzy from Ona, Sybil Danning. You can go to Gloria Gaynor, I Will Survive, the disco star. Don Grady, who was one of my three sons. Greg Hawkes from The Cars. Just on and on. Really just cool people. So I'm glad I picked that one because there's about 20 or 30 people who happened to love that one, whereas a movie called The Rituals was only liked by one person, or a movie called The Relic was only liked by one person. You know, Rosemary Baby was liked by 20. So you could look and see what movies you loved and who loved them. And then there's also a top 10 of the top 10s. So what we did is we compiled everyone's list and said, well, who picked what movie the most? And we have a top 10 in there. And I'm just really proud of it. And you can hear in my excitement, you know, I think every author loves their baby, but this is something that I'm not just loving, but everybody who's getting it is loving it too. And that makes it really, really special.
Awesome. And you know, The Shining is tremendous. I'm glad you picked that. Tremendous classic, absolute classic.
Yeah. And it's one of those ones that stay with you because not only is the scares great, the acting is great, but it's one of those few movies, if you think about it, it doesn't rely on darkness to scare you. It relies on brightness. I mean, some of the scariest scenes are in the snow. And that's the one of the brilliance of Kubrick in that one.
Yeah. Such a great movie. So many iconic scenes that I'm always saying, you know, we always say over and over again with our friends and stuff. Yeah. It's such a great, and whenever it's on, you watch it. To me, it's almost like Star Wars. Like, you could watch it just all the time, and I would never get old, and that's how I feel about Star Wars, so that's how I classify that.
Yeah, it's really funny, because people said, hey, would Star Wars be in your book? And I'm thinking more of, it's not something that scares you. Right. You know, King Kong made the cover, and King Kong is in the book, and people said to me, you know, Big Gorilla, really, in your book? I go, well, yeah, because, you know, before our time in the 1930s, if you're in a theater and that King Kong is filling that cinema screen, which was, you know, five times the size of our screens today. Yeah, man, that scared you. Just like, I guess the most comparable to that would be Jaws, because a shark is in the water and, you know, doesn't really do anything unless it attacks you. And then all of a sudden, you know, for the same reason people were afraid to go in the shower for Psycho and were, you know, afraid to go back in the water for Jaws, those type of movies definitely have a place in the book.
Awesome. Yeah. And just tremendous movies. So many great movies. I mean, it's such a great book. The e-copy was great. I'm definitely going to get a copy through the website. I'm a hardcover guy, but maybe I'll get a paperback. I'm not sure yet, but and I definitely want to get it signed and definitely support you for sure, man. But
I'd be honored. Thanks.
Anyways, so let's get into some Beatles, because you know you're a Beatles expert, aficionado, all these cool things that you've done with the tours over to Liverpool, right? And yeah. It's unbelievable. I mean, the unofficial ambassador of Liverpool over here, Charles Rosnay, over here in Connecticut. And so I guess what I want to ask is, you know, take me back. Where did it start? You know, from your childhood and, you know, where did you grow up and when did that fandom and love of Beatles begin?
Yeah. So I grew up in the Bronx and mom and dad were, you know, they were just cool. You know, they're older and, you know, they had me late in life. So it wasn't as if I was with young parents who were, you know, grooving and bopping and all, but they would listen to AM radio all day. They'd watch horror movies at night. They would take me to the movies and take me to shows and to concerts. And it was just, you know, it was just the most amazing family, and they bought me stuff, you know, and whereas So I hear horror stories of people who had comic books and baseball cards and monster magazines that were thrown out, you know, when the move happened or when the kid started school. They kept my stuff. That was boxed up. We kept everything. Thank God, you know, because some of it paid for, you know, conventions and it was a source for, you know, revenue as the days went on and I needed That's it. Awesome. But I kept most everything. And my first memory is, I'm aging myself here, but my first memory in life forever, I would say, was the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. And writing this book, I remember my mom, you know, sat me down and we said, we're going to watch Bride of Frankenstein. I don't know, maybe I was 3 years old. She wanted me to see Frankenstein, but it wasn't on at the time. And you couldn't screen, Jeff. We couldn't go to Netflix. We couldn't rent the vid. Forget DVDs and Blu-rays. There were no videos at the time. If it wasn't on, man, we weren't watching it. So we lived by the TV guide and we kept looking and kept looking, kept looking. And finally, Bride of Frankenstein was on. We watched it. I was scared out of my, but it took a few days and a few watchings and I fell in love with it. And in writing the book, it dawned on me that that might have been before Ed Sullivan. So I did have a memory prior, but isn't that crazy? Two of my memories are both of either the Beatles or of monster movies, and both of them led me in career paths. I mean, my main thing I do to earn money, my main job is I'm an MC, I'm a DJ, and I do parties and all that. But God, I remember sitting in front of a mirror and lip syncing to, you know, the Beatles and the Four Seasons and the Supremes, and sometimes acting out songs, which is what I then used to do and still do when I do parties. You know, I'm not just that guy who plays the music and sits on it. I'm out there with the crowd acting stuff out. There was a time if I was doing an Elvis song, I'd put on the sideburns. If I was doing a Beatles song, I'd wear a Pepper outfit. If I played Monster Mash, I would have, you know, the Frankenstein mask on. So I'm digressing, but anyway. So as a Beatle fan, yes, from the beginning, but I didn't outgrow it. You know, the Beatle records, every new release I would still get. The monster stuff, I didn't outgrow it. Every new monster movie that came out, I'd want to see. And somehow through college, you know, I got my degree in I got two degrees. I got one in communications, which led me into the DJ and all the conventions and all that stuff. And it's a degree in art, which helped because I published a magazine on the Beatles for like 20 years. But everything I did, I knew that I would have to do something that would entertain me and entertain others. And I always thought that if it's something that I love to do that and it bring people joy, I thought that, you know, there would be enough people, whether it was doing the Beatle tours to Liverpool or the Dracula tours to Transylvania, or we do paranormal conventions now in Connecticut, all the things I did, I had a feel that if there was a need for it and other people weren't doing it and I wanted to do these things, then other people would too. And it's been a good formula because it's been pretty good. And the fact that I do all those things as a fan first, you know, when I started doing the Beatle tours back in 1983, Liverpool wasn't embracing Beatle fans. It wasn't a tourist trap like it is now. You know, it was pretty much, oh yeah, well, the Beatles were here, but they left us. That was the attitude then. And I don't want to say I was a pioneer by bringing fans over there, but the job description in my brain was, if I get enough people to go that I get a free trip, man, this is what I want to do every year. And, you know, for the first whatever amount of years, that was it. That was me, you know, comping myself. Yeah. And this was the same for the Dracula tour when that started. You know, I want to go to Transylvania. I want to visit the castles. I want to see Vlad's homeland and where he's buried and all this stuff. Oh. And so that fortunately, both of them became money makers. And now with COVID, you know, they don't even exist. But the great joy was being able to go to these places years later with people who'd never been before. And seeing the look on their faces, like the first time they get to Liverpool or get into the Cavern Club for the first time or cross Abbey Road. I mean, these are all the things that I dreamt about and fans dream about by the photos they've seen in books, pictures on postcards, you know, covers of record albums. It actually comes to life. It becomes the real deal. You know, you can go to conventions, you could read books, you can live it through it by watching Get Back, any of those. But when you actually go there, oh my gosh, it's like a religious experience. You're really, and so people ask me, you know, aren't you tired? know, they ask a musician, aren't you tired of playing your hit night after night? And I know the answer is no, because you're seeing it through their eyes. You're loving it through an audience that may not have heard it or loves it so much. So in bringing people to these places, even if I've been there countless times, it's the joy of them experiencing the first time that I love the most nowadays.
I was going to say, is that where the famous crosswalk is and everything, where people like to, you know, take the photo and everything like that?
It is in a really busy intersection, right in the middle of a hustling, bustling London area. And it's, we have to stop traffic so people can cross. And if they don't get that perfect shot, they got to cross over and over. And there's beeping, you know, cars are pissed because they have to do this every day with thousands of tourists. But yeah, Abbey, it's iconic. And then we go with the Abbey Road Studios. You know, we've actually recorded on certain years inside as a group. You know, we book the recording studio and actually record in there. And it's been just magical. You know, we call the thing the Magical History Tour, you know, as a takeoff on Magical Mystery Tour. And if fans want to go, the website, if you don't mind, is www.liverpooltours.com. And we've been doing it since 1983, every summer, because that's when they do Beatle Week in Liverpool now. And they embrace the tourists now. There's a few Beatle museums. There's endless clubs. And the Cavern Club, you know, was rebuilt. There's conventions there. So we go during the, you know, the nitty-gritty time of Beatle fans. And there's literally 100,000 Beatle fans from all over the world who come there. And our group of 50 or whatever Americans just have the best time. We get front row seats at everything, VIP treatment, you know, because I don't want to say what you said, the unofficial ambassador to Liverpool, but the fact that I've been going there every year, you know, I'm probably more better known there than if I would step in Danbury, you know.
I was going to say, you're well known over there in Liverpool, and that must be a cool feeling, you know, all the work you've done and all the, you know, all the people you've taken over there. And wow, that's so cool. And being in that studio, unbelievable. And I understand that I saw a post recently from you. Was it the studio producer or the head of the studio that passed recently, or someone Beatle related?
So it was an anniversary, yeah, of George Martin, the Beatles producer, yeah.
Okay.
You know, we've been very fortunate. I've been obviously very lucky and blessed, because when I published the magazine Good Day Sunshine, I was a member of the press. And so, yeah, Rolling Stone would be there, but I would be there too if there was a press conference, if there was backstage access. So I got to meet, you know, Paul a number of times. I got to meet pretty much everyone who's ever been associated or related to the Beatles, their family. And I've become friends with them, you know, coming back to Liverpool every year and seeing John Lennon's sister, or seeing, you know, Paul McCartney's brother, or seeing McCartney himself. It's been pretty amazing that, you know, that they know me, and I'm pretty lucky to be that fan who's gotten to that level. Yeah.
That's so awesome. That's really, really cool. And yeah, I mean, meeting your idols, I'm sure, is an awesome experience. And what an incredible studio, what an iconic town, what an iconic place. And speaking of Good Day Sunshine, how did it come to be that you started writing this magazine for the, you know, a Beatles magazine? How did that come to be?
Yeah. So, you know, I was started producing the conventions while I was in college. And I was, in those days, there was no internet. Do you believe there was such a thing? So when people wanted information, they would write a letter and I would answer the letter. And it got to the point where I was answering hundreds of letters and stamps adding up. And I thought, wait, why don't I just do a newsletter? And in that newsletter, I could be answering all the questions, but also promoting my conventions. And there was a Beatles magazine in Puerto Rico called Good Day Sunshine. And I thought, around this time, I wanted to call my magazine Dig It, which was less Beatles centric, but had a Beatles name in it. That was one of the titles of their songs, with Dig It. But Good Day Sunshine was folding. And I said, all right, Rosita Rodriguez, I will take over your, it was called a fan club, the fanzine. And I'll continue and we'll go on forever. And great, you don't have to pay anything. Just take the name. I don't want the magazine to die. I go, okay, send me your subscription list. I wait a month for the letter to Puerto Rico when there are 18 subscribers. I thought I was starting with, you know, 500 subscribers. Anyway, long story short, within a few years, we had 5,000 subscribers. And when people said, are you ever going to write a Beatles book? I would go back and say, guys, for 20 years, I was putting out a book every other month. When I was doing Good Day Sunshine, it's a Beatles magazine, had 80 pages. Six times a year, I was writing a book. So I was booked out, you know, but how did I do it? It was, I had a great team of people who were writing articles. I was using my art degree to lay it out. I was using my writing skills to edit and write my own stuff, but it was started out as pretty much a promotional piece to promote all the conventions and tours, but it grew into, you know, one of the more respected, you know, there was a handful of other Beatle magazines, one of them was still around, that survived the internet. I figured when, you know, the World Wide Web started, then people could punch up all the information they needed. I didn't think the magazine was as necessary as it was. And I went on to other things, obviously. So it ran its course, as did, I had a something called National Horror Happenings Online, where I would do updates. I would do reviews of horror movies, previews of horror movies, just be horror news. And that was sort of the companion piece to the magazine. The magazine was an actual physical, you know, actual magazine that you would get in the mail and read. National Horror Happenings was an online thing that you can punch up. And the impetus of writing the book came from that online newsletter, because once a month we would do a top 10 list from a celebrity. And those always got the most clicks, the most reads was when I would do a top 10 list. And so, you know, when I, you know, saved them all, I didn't destroy them. I didn't erase them. When I had them online and when COVID hit, that's when I realized I had all those lists and I'd be able to compile them for the book. So everything sort of ties together one way or another. There's that 6 degrees of separation between some of them. But when you hear the story, you get it, you know, growing up, loving them both, how, you know, the Beatle people never realized I was a horror guy. The horror people never realized a Beatle guy. I produced the monkey conventions and do an online, I have a monkeys interview show on a monkeys radio station. So the Beatle people didn't know I was a monkey. You know, I have all these different hats, but when we do an interview like this, it all makes sense. And I think it all comes together right now over you.
Exactly. No, exactly. I love it. I absolutely love it, Charles. This is great. I mean, you are great. And you touched on the Beatles convention. Definitely talk to me about how you started doing that. And then I know you also do other conventions, and one that just sort of popped up recently that's kind of a new thing in the state that you were kind of talking about earlier on in the podcast. So definitely talk about all those.
All right. So the Beatle conventions again started when I was in college, and I had attended a Beatles convention in New York, and I heard there were ones in Boston even before the New York ones. And I thought, all right, well, I don't know anything about marketing or anything else, but if there's one in New York and there's one in Boston, I'll do one for Connecticut, not knowing what I was doing. And I lost the fortune, my parents' fortune, putting on the first one. But I stuck to it. And the first one, I don't know how many people were there, 200 people. But the next one, I did it in a college and there was 500. And the next one was 1,000. So it was building and building. And as it was building, I was bringing in actual stars. And then I started going to Liverpool. So the people I met in Liverpool, I would bring back, you know, the Beatles' first manager, Alan Williams, the Beatles' drummer before Ringo, Pete Best. And they would come back and be guests. So the show started to grow to the point where we were 4,000-6,000 people over a weekend at its best. Because I was a monkeys fan, I started doing monkey conventions because I love the monkeys and I didn't care what people said back then about the, you know, I was an apologist for the monkeys. I always loved their music and always loved the guys. And it was the first in 1981 or 82, I don't remember, whenever I did my first monkeys convention, it was the first time Peter Tork came as a guest. It was the first time there'd never been a Beatle at a convention. There'd never been a monkey at a convention. So Peter Tork was the first monkey to attend a monkeys convention. Pete Best was the first Beatle to attend a Beatles convention. So, you know, these claims of fame that I was able to pass down. And I've always attended horror conventions, but there were always enough of those that I didn't think I needed to do one. Whenever there was already something in place, I would never compete with it. But we hooked up with a friend of mine, Nick Roseman, and we became the shaman and the showman. He's the shaman. He's the real deal. He should be a guest on your show. He's a psychic. He's a medium. He's a sensitive. He's a shaman. He's the exorcist. He does it all. And he's the real deal. He'll walk into a house and never been there before. And he'll go to a room and he goes, whoa, a woman died here. And he's hits it on the nose, things like that. He's very spiritual and he's a great guy, but he and I hooked up and he said, why don't we do a paranormal convention? And I said, of course. I mean, this was a yes. There's none in Connecticut. It's exactly what his field of knowing the other guests. And I know how to produce these things. I know how to promote. And I said, you know, Nick, I don't know the market, but I think we can draw, you know, 200 or so people over the weekend. And he goes, no, we're going to draw 200 each day. We're going to do a 2-day show. I go, all right, we'll give it our best shot. We had 1500 people. And it was like, wow, it's Paracon. It's www.paracon, you know, Paracon for Connecticut, .org, not .com or .net. So paracon.org. And we're going to have another one this summer. And we can have it again at the Ansonia Armory, which is haunted. And it's a great location. And, you know, I think we're going to probably sell out again. So if you love the paranormal stuff, if you love anything ghosts or horror, we're going to have 80 exhibitors, 80 vendors, guest speakers, just 2 full days of great entertainment. And the Beetle Conventions morphed into something else. I did them pretty much through, I don't know, the mid-90s, brought them back to show my kids what I did in 2009, 2010. And then those sort of morphed into a Beatles festival. So for the past 10 years or 15 years, instead of doing Beatle conventions, which were memorabilia centric and more focused on the guests, now it's the Fab Four Music Festival. And it's more about the music because, you know, it's above all is the music always. And instead of having one band play 5 times and be that high level, you know, Beatlemania, incredible band. Now it's 10 bands and it's one band doing solo stuff, one band doing early stuff, one band doing later stuff. You know, each band has to do their own, you know, shtick. They can't repeat the stuff. So that's been really successful. And we've jumped around. We had it in Danbury for a number of years at Ives Concert Park. It was at the Oakdale Theater in Wallingford. And more recently we had it at a Nolan Field. So we're looking for the next place we'll have it. And that's really sort of something we can do through COVID only because it's outdoors and it's, you know, social distancing and it's a little safer in this crazy climate. But by, you know, by the summer or by the time we're doing it again, hopefully the world will be better.
And at Paracon, so we're talking like paranormal investigators and stuff like that. And you get to talk to them. Is that kind of what it is?
Paranormal investigators, people who are on those, you know, ghost hunter type shows, people who've written books. You know, we have people who specialize on the Salem witch trials, someone else who specializes on exorcisms, different people from different fads. We even opened it up to a few people who were UFO experts, you know, because there's crossover and all that. But yeah, being an author, my book was supposed to be out by the last Paracon and it wasn't because I was going to debut it there, but we had 2 or 3 other authors. So we had an authors forum where I interviewed other authors who, you know, have written, some do paranormal fiction. Yeah, it's really the gamut of anything that's ghost, spirit, paranormal, you know, the unexplained, the supernatural, anything like that. And it just blew my mind how many people came out and how many their people were having their fortunes read. They had card readers, tarot readers. It's just amazing stuff.
Wow, that sounds dope.
Yeah, right?
That's like a lot of fun, actually. I might have to check that out. And
what happened is people who were really into it brought people who were just, okay, I'll come along with you. And the people who just come along have as good a time as the diehards. You know, we find that because there's so much entertainment value in the things that I do, that even if you're not, I'm not that crazy about ghosts. Of course you're not. You don't believe in ghosts. Come anyway, and you have a good time. Between the food trucks and the vendors and the special guests, and all, it's just so much to do. And you know, $15 a ticket, how can you go wrong?
I love it. That's great. I used to watch a lot of Ghost Hunters, Taps. Oh, yeah. Those guys. Sure. I loved that. They were some OGs. That was great. That was good stuff. And you know, with paranormal and stuff, what's your thoughts on that? Because I know that do you investigate? Because you do some investigating yourself, no? So what's your take on the paranormal? What are some things that you've experienced? Because I got to ask you.
Yeah. So I'm not going to tell you my experiences.
Okay.
But I've had two unbelievable ones. And one was while I was still in college. Another one happened when I moved into my own house, and my wife won't let me tell the story.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha.
She doesn't want my kids to even know, but they're not going to hear, so they won't know. I will write about it in the book that I've got coming out. I'm doing a book on Connecticut ghosts and the paranormal from a different angle. There's a lot of books out that tell Connecticut's most famous ghost stories and ghost places. What I'm doing is I'm assembling some of the people who've actually had experiences and are kind of known in the field. And I've asked them to submit their most supernatural experience. And I'm compiling all theirs. Plus, I will write about mine. And am I a paranormal investigator? I guess so, because I go to these paranormal investigations and I bring my camera. And I don't get it, Jeff, because I go as a skeptic. I go as a non-believer, and I don't see things and I don't feel things and I don't hear things as Nick does. But when I take pictures and go home, and I look at what I've done on the camera, on my phone, it's like, oh my God, I've captured things that are just unbelievable. I've captured specters, and I've captured apparitions, and I've captured red orbs, which are very rare. And so I'll eventually show those in the book, but I do tell about them. And I tell about the people who have had experiences on my Dracula tours and on my ghost tours when we do our conventions and we do our speeches and we do our events. And a lot of what we do is we'll pick a place that people know or may not know about, Stepney Cemetery, which is in your old stomping grounds, Monroe, Newtown area, or Dudley Town. These are places that are reputedly haunted, and Nick and I will host trips there for small groups, and we'll do orientation. We'll teach them how to do investigations, and then we'll take them on the actual investigation. We'll spend 3 hours, and people have the most amazing experiences. It's unbelievable.
Is Dudley Town that area where they have those small structures, or am I thinking of the wrong thing? Because I know there's something
called Little People's Village in Middlebury.
Okay that's what I'm thinking of. Okay, yeah, that's
taking people there. Yes,
that's
there's also a holy land in Waterbury, which is also very, very. Dudley Town is this crazy area that you're really legally not supposed to go to. It's in Cornwall, Connecticut. And a family was banished there from England because they were just lunatics. And they set up an area, they set up this town, this village, and they started killing each other and killing themselves. Well, long story short, the place is definitely cursed. Through the years, I don't want to say bike groups, but occultists, demons, people who shouldn't be out there have made it their home and did a lot of off the wall stuff there till it was completely illegal to set foot in there. And what we've done is we found a way to get there, not maybe the right way to do things, but so that it's outside the law, gray area. And we've taken a few groups there. We're not going to do it anymore because of the experiences that people had were unbelievable. I mean, people's hair was pulled up in the air by nobody there. And there's no reason for it. You know, we've had this beautiful couple. She was really into it. He was just along for the ride. He's standing there. And all of a sudden, everyone's pointing to him. His hair is just starting to stand up on its own. No reason, no electronic, nothing. There's no reason for it, Jeff. And everyone's pointing to him. We go, what? And we're all taking pictures to have proof of it. And he became a believer. Another gal saw a black figure run across and said, oh, did you see that? Hiker. I go, hiker? There's no place to hike on the other side of that area. She goes, no, black cowl, black face. And as she's saying it, she's realizing that no hiker or biker or jogger would be dressed in a black cowl with a black. She saw something that, you know, that really freaked her out. Another gal had joined us from New Jersey because she'd always wanted to go to Dudley Town, but was afraid to. And her experience, she was freezing. And this was during the summer. And she was just freezing. She had chills all of a sudden. We took her out of that one area. There's one area. And she went back to normal immediately. I mean, she was freezing. And when we took her out, she was like, her breath came back. What I will tell you is, going into this area, you're in the woods, and then all of a sudden you're in a field, and all of a sudden, no birds, no crickets, no sounds. It is like, I don't want to say the word death, but it is like completely silent. Half the phones stop working. There's no reason. There's no explanation. Gotcha. So if you don't believe in something and you go to Dudleytown, you're going to probably believe. And I don't want to go back there. It's just too many things happen that, you know, I can't explain. And we only would go in the day. We'd only go in the summer, and we'd only go as a group. But we're going on record saying we're never going back there, right?
Gotcha. Exactly. Never going back. How about that lighthouse? I know we have a lighthouse in Connecticut that the ghost hunters went to, and I thought that was interesting what they caught there on camera.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of lighthouses. I tend to think most lighthouses, because of their age and because of tragedies and accidents and deaths, are most of them are haunted. We did an event at Penfield Beach, Penfield Pavilion, which is at Penfield Beach in Fairfield. And there's a haunted lighthouse there, which if you Google Penfield Pavilion Lighthouse, you can come up with the story. And we didn't go investigate there, but we did an event at the pavilion and had a really great turnout. It sold out. And we do some of those things throughout the state. We go to a theater. We do a scrying session, which you've never heard of and is unbelievable because people sit in front of a mirror. We light candles. We turn off all the lights. You kind of get into a hypnotized mode, but you stare into the mirror long enough. Things happen, Jeff. You can't explain it. Some people see themselves levitating. Other people fade away and only see the other people in the crowd. Other people have just seen the crowd leave and only themselves. And one gal, my God, and she's normal. I say that first because you say, oh, yeah, these people must be. This gal who I know really well came on one of them, and she saw her family who had passed. She saw her mother, her father, her grandparents visit her in that mirror as she was doing a scrying session. So when we do these theaters, we do a presentation. We shoot a camera out into the crowd to see if there's things flying over people's heads. And there always are. We talk about all the experiences we've had. And then we end with the scrying session. And it's like a 1 hour, 2 hour show. And everywhere we go, it's been just unbelievable results.
Unbelievable. Wow. Yeah. That is so cool and interesting. I'm so glad you could share that. And, you know, a few more things before we wrap up, and thank you so much for coming on. This is,
I'm awesome. Loving it. You're getting me to talk about stuff I don't talk about a lot of shows because we're all over the place.
I'm loving this. This is tremendous. And, one of those questions is, you were talking before about the tours, to see Dracula's Castle in Transylvania. What is that like? And how did you start doing that?
So we were doing the Beatle tours. They're real successful. My friend Danny, who's since passed, you know, he would help me with creative stuff. He would, if I couldn't go on an event, he'd be there for me, or he'd be with me. We're best friends. And he said, Charles, isn't there another place besides Liverpool we can do a trip to? And so we did a Kiss tour because the band Kiss was doing something in London, and they were actually doing an autograph session. So we brought Kiss fans to London. We did a Rolling Stones trip. And he goes, no, we do good. We're rocking the rock stuff. What can we do outside of the box? He goes, you love horror. What? I go, well, Transylvania. He goes, well, is there such a place? I go, yeah, it's in Romania. I don't know if we can go there. It's, you know, I don't know if it's communist, third world country. I don't know. He did the research, and he found a company that did, like, you know, a one day trip to a castle or this and that. We did more research and more reason. We hooked up with this great company, and we said, we don't want to be that senior citizen group that brings people for a little sightseeing. They have breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then they go to sleep. We want to be the group of horror fans who do everything that's not just historical, but also combines the fiction and the novel of Bram Stoker's Dracula. We're the only group that does that and has done it now since 1983 and brought fans. And because we say we're fans doing what fans would want. So you're going to everything that has to do with Dracula, with the legend, with the fiction, with the story, but you're combining it with Vlad Tepes, Vlad the Impaler, and you're visiting his castle ruins. You're seeing where, you know, where it actually happened in decades ago, centuries ago. And you're seeing where he was buried, where he was born. And you're really walking through the footsteps of Dracula and Vlad. on these trips, and we go during Halloween. And this year, we're if the weather and not the weather, if COVID allows, we're doing a summer version of it for the people who can't go during Halloween. And I'm going to be hosting it in July. And where it's draktours.com, D-R-A-C-T-O-U-R-S, because I think Dracula Tours was taken. And sure enough, we have it's the greatest time. You know, people don't believe me, but I tell them there's no business in the world other than these tours where people give 100% satisfaction. I mean, they come back and they just forget rated 5 stars. We're lifetime friends. People who go on the trip, they're in touch with on Facebook. They're sending each other Christmas cards. That's what makes these trips so great, is the people who go on them. Yeah, I put together a phenomenal itinerary. I'm proud of myself for that. People I know are going to have a great time. And I go beyond the call of duty, because if we're on the coach and we're traveling through Liverpool, I'm showing Beatle movies on board. If we're traveling through the Carpathian Mountains up Borgo Pass to Dracula's Castle, you better believe I'm showing great vampire movies on board. So I'm doing stuff that, you know, no one would have thought of to do. But if the group sucks, and not the vampire sucks, if the group is boring and are lame, you know, the trip, no matter how great it's going to be, all right, it was a great trip. But everyone who goes connects their kindred spirits. If they're on the Beatles tour, they're all Beatle fans. It makes sense. If they're on the Dracula tour, they're horror fans. They're you know, they love vampires. They love this genre. So automatically they're going to connect, but they connect so well. I mean, we've had marriages, dude. We've had people, you know, hook up in the verbials on the trips, but we've had people who are friends that, you know, Christmas time, they're getting together. They're sending each other Christmas cards. They're writing to me, here's our reunion picture and all that. And that makes me feel good. You know, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years of people going on tours and having such a great time. It's so satisfying.
And I know Halloween passed months ago, but Fright Haven, talk to me about Fright Haven. For those who don't know, what is Fright Haven? What's the deal with that? How did that come to be?
So, Fright Haven is Connecticut's largest indoor haunted attraction. Back when I was doing the Dracula tours and doing the conventions and doing everything else, I said, well, I don't have enough on my plate.
Yeah,
Connecticut doesn't have a world-class indoor haunted. It had a haunted graveyard. It had... what was it? It's so many really great ones. And by mentioning them, the problem is I'm going to leave out some, and shame on me. Trail of Terror, Wallingford, Connecticut. All these were great, but they're all outdoors. And I thought, wait a second, I can do the same scares indoors, maybe. And if it rains, we can still be open. If it snows, we can still be open. And we took over a giant Staples in West Haven, Connecticut that had closed and had been barren for, you know, a few years, and said, well, let's put in a haunted house right off the highway. And dude, it was so successful. And I did it for a bunch of years. And then 2006, 2007, the economy, I lost the lease. They wouldn't rent to us. They wanted to do they wanted to break it down. Fright Haven had stopped. And then 2016, I got the itch again. And I thought, you know, it's been dormant for too long. I found a great place in Stratford, Connecticut. Put it up again, bigger than ever, better than ever. You know, attendance wise, amazing. Review wise, amazing. And then when COVID hit, I thought, you know what? I'm afraid to do it. I really was. You know, I'm not afraid of a lot of things. I'm not afraid of taking chances, but I didn't think that I would have the wherewithal and the safety in place. And I put it out on the market. And sure enough, there was this company from Kentucky who had haunted hotel and had other haunted attractions in other states, said, we're going to, if you know, we'll buy from you, we'll give it a shot. And they already had the right things in place. They have more lighting, safety measures. Now, a haunted house, I'm a dummy. A haunted house is already social distancing, because you're letting in a group of six, then you're waiting for a group of two, you know, so in a way it is safe. But they put in places so that when the monster scares jumped out, they weren't in people's face. So a lot of things they put in. And sure enough, the past 2 years, where I haven't been the scare master, the owner, has been very successful. But I come back there and I do, you know, special guest scares, and I'm still part of it. And I also do acting. So I've been in a bunch of horror shorts. So the scaring in a haunted house isn't so far-fetched from, you know, scaring in a film and stuff. In my own book, you know, everyone said, did you do a top 10 horror list of your own, of your favorite horror movies? So instead, what I did is my top 10 favorite films and favorite roles that I've been in. And so, you know, you get a kick out of it because you see me as a vampire. I was in a vampire. I'm a horror clown. I also got to play Elton John in HBO. So I got some really cool, real legitimate, you know, acting chops and acting credits, but my joy is doing the horror films and horror shorts. And I've been in a bunch of them, which is very lucky, I guess, because I don't know. I don't think I'm a great actor, but I think I just, my personality sometimes, you know, gets me some of those casting gigs. But you asked about the Haunted House. That's still successful. It's still open, not just Halloween, but it opens for Christmas, for Valentine's, for special occasions through the year. And frighthaven.com is the website. I think if anyone's into haunted houses and haunted attractions, they've probably been there already. They've probably loved it. But if they haven't, you know, hopefully they're a viewer of yours, they'll check it out.
That is so cool. I love it. I haven't been, so I'm going to go for sure. I can't wait when it's time. And it's going to be great. And I'm super, super, super excited for that. And, you know, I'm so glad you brought up the horror acting, because I've seen the name float around, Cryptmaster Chucky. And is that where that came from?
Cryptmaster Chucky is more my horror host persona.
Gotcha.
So, you know, when you put on the makeup and the wig and a certain outfit, if I do conventions as the host, that's what that was. When I was the scare master at Fright Haven, I was Cryptmaster Chucky. In the book, you know, that's the pseudonym. But when I do the acting roles, it's Charles F. Rosenay. If you go to IMDb, you'll see some of the credits. And I've been lucky to do not just, you know, the horror shorts and horror films, but a lot of, you know, mainstream roles. So I've been pretty lucky.
Awesome. Do you go to Comic-Con? Are you into that side or not really?
Yeah. Oh, sure. I don't go to the major ones because they tend to have fallen out on times where other things were going on. But I go to the ones in Massachusetts. I haven't been to the one in New York. There's a Connecticut. There's so many, you know. And
yeah,
I got to throw in one thing. In 2010, I produced something called RockCon, which was the Comic-Con of rock and roll. We had 100 rock stars. And it was everyone from, you know, one of the Beach Boys, one of the Supremes, Tommy James, you know, heavy metal people, one of the Village People, you know, you name it. They were there. It was like a who's who. And I thought that was going to be the future of rock and roll as far as conventions. And it was in New Jersey and it was in the Meadowlands. And I lost a fortune. My first conventions never do well, except for the Paracon in Connecticut. But I never continued that. And it's really funny. So in part of me says, man, I can't go to a Comic-Con because I should be doing Rock-Con still. So maybe that's why. But with the book, I might actually be doing a few Comic-Cons next year.
Awesome. That's great. You know, two more things. And one of those is, you know, what are you sort of most proud of with everything you've done? I mean, you've done so much. Is there one singular thing where you're like, man, I'm really proud of that? Or are you just like really glad that you get to do all these cool things? And I'm sure obviously the book, you're very proud of the book and the one that's going to come next. But I don't know. What's just a moment that you remember or just something you're really proud of?
Jeff, I don't want to be cheesy here, but I'm most proud of Lauren, Harry, and Ian. Those are my three kids.
Got
two teens and a girl, and you know, studying law. And nothing compares to that production. And you know, they've turned out so amazing. You know, everything else is great, and it's gravy, and it's, you know, amazing. And I'm so blessed, but nothing compares to that. You know, so to pick anything else, it's like, if I had, you know, 500 grandchildren, which would I pick? I couldn't. Everything else, you know, the book is so, I'm proud of it. The conventions, I'm so proud of, you know, each thing has its own, I'm proud of it because of, you know, I'm proud of the Beatle conventions because of the guests who I was able to get, you know, John Lennon's wife, Cynthia Lennon, you know, Pete Best. I guess it's like a on and on of all the special people who I had. The tours because of the people having such a great time. The Paracon because you know, whoever thought that this little show that I thought was going to be like your local collectors convention would be, you know, a world-class paranormal event. So I'm proud of so many things. I couldn't pick one thing out of those, but my kids are everything. And I, nothing else really matters.
That's beautiful. I love your answer. That's beautiful. I agree. Family's everything, man. Everything you do is great, but at the end of the day, family's what's up for sure. And listen, Charles, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really, really appreciate it. This was great. I mean, we could have kept chatting for hours, but I mean, come on, like you're busy.
I can ramble, right?
You're a busy guy.
I go on.
No, it's great. I think this is great because there's more we could have covered. So I would love to have you back on the show again down the road so we can talk about more, especially the next book. And one last thing, I like to ask my guests before they leave me, I do it to all my guests I have in season one, bringing it to season two, is when you are in New Haven, I don't know if you're a pizza guy, are you into pizza? You like pizza?
This is ridiculous. I've never eaten at Sally's. I've never eaten at Pepe's. I've never eaten at Modern. I grew up in the Bronx. I lived in New Haven most of my life.
Yeah.
I live in Orange and I've never had their pizza.
Oh no, because that's what I was going to ask. What's your favorite when you go to, when you're in New Haven? Because I knew you lived there. Okay. I got you. No worries. Listen, Charles, you and me, we're going. We're doing it. You're gonna experience Sally's or something. Well, I'll meet you up there anytime. No problem.
One of my best friends, Dean Falcone, is a great musician. I managed him when he was in a band called The Excerpts. He was involved in New Haven, A Pizza Love Story, some film of that sort. And it's a documentary that's, you got to check it out. If you're a pizza guy and you're one of the, then you got to check out this documentary. It's amazing. How could I not have been? It's the same reason, I think, and it doesn't make sense, but when I lived in New York, I never visited the Statue of Liberty, the Empire State Building. I never visited those places until years later when I moved to Connecticut and went there. So maybe when I move out of Connecticut and I settle in Florida someday, when I come back to Connecticut, I'll go to New Haven and have pizza.
Sounds good. You know, in fact, they're starting to make New Haven style pizza in Florida. You know, obviously it's not the same, but yeah, it's not the same, but
no way.
you might be able to still get it down there. So don't worry. But you know, on that note, what are some restaurants or some, you know, or pizza around you that you like to get?
For some reason I go to Edge of the Woods a lot and people say it's comparable to one of those places.
Okay.
Just cause my family, I'm always taken to go from there. We're not big out. When we go to New York, we tend to eat out. You know, if we take a trip outside of the area, we're not big restaurant people locally. If you were doing a show on restaurants and you were bringing on celebrities to talk about the restaurants, it's one show I couldn't do. You've actually come on a subject that I can't ramble on.
Gotcha. Well, listen, no worries. You know, you've got so much going on. I do not blame you one bit. Thank you once again, the wonderful Charles Rosenay on Sweeten Up Podcast. Appreciate it so much. I'm going to get the book very soon, probably the next day or two. You'll see my order popping up on your website. I can't wait. I'm going to show it to everyone. I'm going to spread the word, of course. And listen, man, I can't wait to follow along and just see everything you're doing. So just before we sign off here, where can people follow you on social media and everything like that?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook and on Instagram, Charles Rosenay, Rosenay. But, you know, visit the websites. The Dracula Tour one is dractours.com. The Beatles one is liverpooltours.com. And for the Paracon, it's Paracon with two N's .org. And the book is www.bookoftop10horrorlists.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it. Everyone definitely check out Charles. He's the man. He's the real deal. And Charles, thank you so much. And I hope you have a great evening. Thank you
so much, Jeff. I appreciate it as well.
Huge thanks once again to my guest on the podcast today, my man, Charles Rosenay. Thank you so much, Charles, for coming on the show. What an incredibly interesting chat, getting to know all the amazing things you do. I cannot wait to get a copy of the book and to continue to follow along on your exciting journey of entertainment and fun. Onward and upward, my friend. Yet again, another episode of Sweeten Up is in the books. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. We would greatly appreciate your feedback and support. As a reminder, you can play the podcast with the help of your smart speaker by simply saying, play the podcast Sweeten Up with Jeff Spencer. Thank you as always to my best friends, the guys who make it all possible, post-production and music Morgan Lutzi, production and art director Kurt Vinci, editor and writer Nick Passacretta, and a special thanks as always to Devin Cipelli. My guest on the podcast next week is a returning guest from season one, and I am so glad she could join us back on the show, the great and powerful Neviana Zgaba. Neviana Zgaba is the owner and founder of Aquila's Nest Vineyard in the Sandy Hook area of Newtown, Connecticut. Neviana and her husband Ardian opened the vineyard a little over a year ago, and I am excited to have Neviana back on the show, live inside the vineyard, to talk all about the first year with the vineyard, her successes, all the new additions, updates, the winemaking, and everything in between. It's a great conversation, and I can't wait for you to hear it. But until then, you know the deal. Stay safe, stay healthy, love you all, peace.